It's almost time, kids. The clock is ticking. Be in front of your TV sets for the horror-a-thon.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way. It's the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. But not in a creepy way. Okay, well, happy Halloween. This is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2004 movie Three Extremes, a showcase for Asian horror directors.
Do you want to discuss this year's Halloween theme?
Sure. Actually, why don't you discuss this year's Halloween theme?
Okay, well, yeah, all right. Thanks for putting me on the spot when I was trying to put you on the spot.
Well, didn't you come up with the Halloween theme, though?
Well, maybe. Yeah, okay. So you were putting together a list of Halloween movies, and you had some of your old favorites in there. I think we were looking for a movie to round it out and couldn't really decide on one. And then we ended up having too many Halloween movies, so we were trying to come up with a theme. And you had, I believe, a French movie, and I had added a Korean movie. And maybe there was a cheater, like a Canadian movie. I forget. I threw it out there. Maybe we should do like an international themed series of Halloween episodes this year. So that's what we're doing.
It just occurred to me, we need to add another movie because we need to put Pontypool on that list.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen the movie?
I've seen the beginning of it due to a DVR malfunction, and I've been really upset about not having been able to finish it.
Oh, I own it. I will bring it to you with Hellride.
Nice. It might be back on Netflix streaming now. It's been on my list for years and years.
Well, they did along with that movie, they actually did like an audio play that they broadcast on CBC about Pontypool. And I listened to it over and over and over again because I did a submission to the Horror Etc. podcast where I was trying to tell a story from my work, but I kind of set it in a Pontypool setting. Like, I was very careful in how I crafted it, that it kind of sounded like Pontypool. So much so that I even had my wife play a little role as like the radio show producer. And I listened to this like hour-long audio play, whatever, over and over and over and over again, and rework this thing. And I was, you know, I figured, okay, it's a Canadian podcast, or it's a horror podcast by Canadian guys, so they have seen Pontypool, I know that, and they'll recognize the origin of it. And I was feeling pretty good, and so I submitted it, and they put it in a segment they called Schlock Corner and didn't discuss it at all. Like, they included it, so people have heard it. It's not even all that great. But I'm like, oh, I slaved over this, like, 3 or 4 minute piece of audio back before I did the podcast. And, and yeah, it was like, oh, I cannot believe that they put it in Schlock Corner. Like it was schlock. It's not schlock. It may not be great, but it's not schlock. Anyway, sorry. So,
so that wasn't an endearing term.
No. Well, they may have thought it was an endearing term, but I did not take it as an endearing term. And briefly, I had my feelings hurt. And then I had to remind myself that I don't actually have feelings, so it was fine.
How's that working out for you?
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. No, let me tell you, I listened to Pontypool like 24 times. In fact, I wanted to read the book Pontypool Changes Everything until I realized that, you know, Pontypool the movie is a kind of a zombie tale that has a unique method of contagion. And I won't even kind of go into that, but the book is a lot more about that contagion part of it and less about the zombie part of it. So it might not even translate to audio. Like, it's more of an art piece book than it is.
So you would have to read it.
Yeah, and I don't know if I'm capable of it. Yeah, so we're gonna fly across the globe to Asia for a movie called Three Extremes. Apparently there was a lower budget movie called Three that was also a showcase for Asian directors, but the Three Extremes was the second rendition where they took like three name brand box office up and coming directors. Maybe not even up and coming, just maybe name brand.
And Three wasn't necessarily a horror anthology, was it?
I don't think so. It may have just been like a showcase for directors, like of short films. Because, well, first of all, it's an anthology in that there are three short stories in there, but they are not tied to each other in any way in this movie, nor is there a wraparound story. It's just simply three short films glued together.
Are you sure they're not tied together?
You're going to have to tell me how they're tied together.
Maybe weird tongue things?
You think so? Is that on purpose?
I don't know. It falls apart because I can't remember one from the third movie.
Yeah, I don't know. If it is weird tongue things, that would be interesting. Yeah, if there was a connection between these three stories, I don't know them. Or I don't know what it is. But I would recommend this movie because it is a beautiful movie. Without exception, all three stories are shot so beautifully.
Yeah, they're all of them. They don't feel like short stories. Each of them feels like a fully crafted movie, but it just moves so fast that there's so much content in each one, and each one is done so well, and they're all so different.
Yeah, and they have, it's just a strange, and I don't know if it's a cultural thing, but there's some strange tone things going on that really work to all the story's advantages.
Yeah, I mean, you had kind of like a mostly traditional, kind of creepy, mystical horror movie with some body horror in it to start off. And then you had sort of an almost comedy horror movie. And then you end with just like a mind fuck of a movie.
I was going to mention, yeah, the last story is a total mind fuck.
Oh, and yeah, it screws with the audience so well. I mean, I guess we'll talk about them in order so we can talk about it more when we get there. But yeah, there's a lot of misdirection in that third one that's done so well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, no, let me tell you. Yeah, I guess we'll just dive in if you want.
Yes, I do.
Okay. So the first film, at least in the edition that I saw, which I think is the same edition that you saw that's on Netflix, hard copy. Some of the other editions, yes, by the way, have them in a different order. But this edition starts out with the short film Dumplings, which, by the way, was made into a feature-length film later, starring mostly the same actors.
And have you seen it?
I have not.
I don't think I'd want to.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I don't think there's a need to. I think 38 minutes of this Dumplings is plenty, and, you know, plenty rich. And I don't know anything about the director Fruit Chan.
It's got to be a pseudonym, right?
Yeah, something. I don't know.
IMDb says he's a real dude.
What else has he directed? Well, okay, anything else that we would know, I guess, is my question.
Nothing that I've heard of. Although okay. He does have an unfortunate sounding movie named Public Toilet.
Well, after Dumplings, I don't want to see Public Toilet. Just going to tell you that right now. So,
I'm with you.
Okay. So Dumplings, it deals with an aging actress wishing to reclaim her youth. She goes and visits Aunt May, played by Bai Ling, who, by the way, is a nut in real life. And if you've ever heard any interviews with her.
Yeah, she's she's a dingbat.
Yeah. Like in, why can't I think of these movies? Jason Statham, either Adrenaline or Electricity. God damn it. What is that movie? There's two movies called
Crank?
Crank, yes. In Crank 2, which is a fantastic movie, was she in Crank 2 or just Crank 1? Maybe she was just in the original Crank. Anyway, they had to subtitle her even though she speaks English in the movie. Because she just makes no sense and they just let her go with it. Anyway, okay, so back to this movie. So she plays...
And Aunt May lives in some sort of like a district where they do... it's sort of like this ghetto where you can go get some beauty treatments. Because she walks by another woman who's being threaded when she's trying to find Aunt May.
Yeah, which is an interesting thing I had never seen before this movie. Where they use, threads to trim your eyebrows or something?
Yeah, I think body hair anywhere.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. Again, I'm not sure how that... Can you get a Brazilian threading?
I imagine.
Well, anyway. You're right. It's sort of like a ghetto. And she sort of disguises herself to go in there. But she meets with Aunt May because... Aunt May makes these special dumplings that have regenerative properties. And as an actress, you need to, youth is what you have. It's the commodity that you trade upon. So you want to be as youthful as possible.
Yeah. And she hasn't worked in a while. And her husband is being very obviously unfaithful to her.
Yes. And the reason why these dumplings have these regenerative properties is because they contain a special secret ingredient, which it's not so secret, really. It's human fetuses, which are the colors in dumplings are so rich. It's got lots of reds and whites, and the score is so serene that it's a total contrast to the actual subject matter.
Oh, yeah. Everything surrounding the narrative is great. I mean, like the sound editing. I mean, just the crunch you hear when she's eating the dumplings. It was nauseating.
Some of the they get progressively crunchy as it goes along. Because it starts out with very small fetuses, and it toward the end, they're getting toward the more potent things with older fetuses. In fact, the final batch is a full-term firstborn male. So he actually has, bones that are formed and whatnot.
Born of incest, right?
Yes, of course. A special baby.
Because those are the best.
Yeah, they are the best. Mother is so young and healthy. But it's so great. And so, somebody in the IMDb comments said that the sound of her eating in the beginning of the movie is the same sound that they use when she's having sex with her husband. Which... is if true is fantastic.
That is pretty great.
Yeah, so you get to see You know, Aunt May is fairly matter of fact about the whole thing. And not only does she serve these dumplings in a variety of different ways, but she also sings some songs as entertainment as well.
Yeah, so weird.
Yeah. Yeah, just kind of, it kind of, again, it breaks you out of the horror a little bit, because it just kind of tilts you a little bit off kilter.
Well, it distracts you from the subject matter, but it's still really, like, disconcerting. Like, it still makes you very uncomfortable.
Oh, absolutely. And Mrs. Lee, who's the actress, she really has, I mean, and again, in a 38-minute movie, you get to see her from being horrified and disgusted to being kind of intrigued to, toward the end, just needing the dumplings, you know, and not being, you know, she's just a party to it.
Yeah, like you said, Aunt May isn't very bashful about what the dumplings are made of. So, you know, the actress knows, I guess, intellectually what's in them. But when she sneaks a peek at the dumplings being made fresh, she gets a sight that she's not prepared for. And that really freaks her out. But she comes around.
Yeah, she definitely comes around. And in the meantime, we learn a little bit about how Aunt May gets her ingredients, and that's she gets it from a clinic, but she also does sort of midwifery, kind of.
back alley abortions, right?
Yeah, yeah, but in this case, like a full term back alley abortion.
Well, I think it was I think she said the baby was maybe 5 months along.
Yeah, and the girl that she delivers this baby from ends up bleeding out on the bus, which is, the scene is so, like, I my notes say, like, it's beautiful and horrifying at the same time.
Yeah, it also made me ponder one of the thoughts I never really thought I would have in my head is, how long would you be sitting in a pool of fresh blood before you realized it? Because that dude is there for a while.
Well, yeah, that was part of the little comic relief, is a dude sits down in the blood. He and his friend are talking as they get on the bus, and they sit down in the blood, and yeah, it's like, yeah, you would think you would notice something. Maybe you have really tight weave on your polyester pants or something.
Here's hoping.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, truly horrifying. And then, if, you know, again, this is not a story that's really letting anybody off the hook. Because, you know, Mrs. Lee, a morality play here, you know, she has a dinner party where everybody comments that she looks great, but she smells bad, and she's got this rash developing, and that is a fantastic scene of, like, sort of, it's sort of her comeuppance.
Yeah, and I think the implication is that the dumplings that she just ate, made by the more advanced fetus, while maybe accelerating the regenerative process, may have been rotten in some way.
Right? Well, because they were, it was a child of incest. And she ends up going to the doctor, who says that, well, the rashes are from stress, and it's no wonder because you're 2 months pregnant, even though you thought you were infertile. So the mother of the schoolgirl that died after having this abortion ends up stabbing her husband nearly to death, and Aunt May leaves town, which means that Mrs. Lee is without her special dumplings. And in the end of this short little thing, we get Aunt May, who's at, like, she's in a new area and kind of presumably, like, starting up her business again. And then we cut to Mrs. Lee, who's in a bathtub, and she like aborts her own baby and then eats the fetus.
They don't show her eating the fetus, right?
Well,
I think it's just, it's implied.
Yeah. And we got the tongue thing going on.
Yeah. It ends with this really weird, like, CGI, tongue, which is way too long as she like, slurps up blood that had run down her chin.
Yeah.
It looked very demonic.
Yeah. And super, I mean, it just was the final punctuation on the creepy shot. Because don't you hear her, like, crunching on the fetus? Like, maybe you don't see it, but I think you hear it.
Yeah. Yeah, and the first time I watched it, I thought she might be dying because blood trickles out of her mouth. But that's actually because she just ate her baby, right?
Yeah, because she's smiling.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, oh yeah, it's, I mean, again, it takes that body horror thing, you know, if you don't like David Cronenberg, you're definitely not going to like this little short.
Yeah, so there's a scene in Fight Club after Tyler has spent the night with Marla, and he's recounting it, to Jack, and he talks about some of the nasty shit that Marla said to him, and when he talks about how she said I haven't been fucked like that since grade school, he has this great like hand motion where he just kind of flicks both hands out to show his disgust, and I did that with my mind when that movie ended. I was just like, yeah.
Oh, well, exactly. It's like, you know, because it starts off again so like pretty and light, and even when you get what's, you know, I just thought of as like gummy fetuses that she's just chopping up. You know, it's like, you know, like, well, this is horrible, but nah, we'll see where it goes. And then by the end, you're just like, no, they can't be. No, surely they won't. Ah, I can't believe they did that.
Yeah, because if this was a morality tale, then something horrible was supposed to happen to the actress.
Yeah, but exactly.
Nope.
Yeah.
She eats her own self-aborted baby and is happy about it.
Yeah, yeah.
So for her, it's a happy ending.
Yeah, and for you know, Aunt May seems to do fine, you know. And but yeah, that family with the mother who, you know, lost her daughter and, you know, end up killing her husband also, or presumably killing her husband. She had not stabbed him quite to death at that point. It's like, ugh. But yeah, so that's Dumplings. A tasty little morsel.
What a way to start out.
Yeah, well, then we go to the more of a comedy show, which is the second feature is a short called Cut by South Korean director Park Chan-wook, or Chan-wook Park.
And what else has he done?
He did Thirst. And what else did he do? Oh, hold on. Did he do Old Boy?
Yeah, he did all of those, right?
Yeah. Oh, and the what is it? The
whole Vengeance trilogy.
Yeah, and this is a story that I mean, immediately when I got into it, I was like, "Oh, this is kind of like he's the main character in this movie is a director." And so he's telling the story about himself.
Yeah, it had like a Stephen King feel to it, right? Where Stephen King would write stories like Misery, which was sort of about his own fear of what might happen if he encountered a crazy fan.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a lot of writers in Stephen King stories because that's what you know. But yeah, so we have this successful film director who has made, what, like five really successful movies. And we begin the scene from what looks like a pretty bad modern vampire movie.
Yeah, that's the thing. The movie he's working on currently looks terrible.
Oh, it does, yes. Okay, the thing about this movie, which I thought this was like, this was a portfolio for all of the crazy camera tricks that Chan-Wook Park could pull off. They were all these tracking shots and steady cam shots and these dolly pull out smash cut things. I mean, it was a crazy amount of that kind of stuff.
Well, because it's a satire, right? It's a satire of sort of auteur directors.
Yeah, it's got to be. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So we opened with this bad movie, and then the set of the movie actually looks just like the director's actual house. So the director arrives home. Oh, there's actually a couple of movies I watched, including this one, this last couple of weeks, had scenes where somebody turned on a blender and then just walked away from it as it was running. Have you ever walked away from a running blender?
No. Another thing I don't do, I don't walk through a dark house without turning on lights.
Well, there's that, yes. So, so he goes home and makes himself some kind of veggie smoothie, and then he goes to the bathroom, leaving the blender running, and then the power goes out. Which, you know, is par for the course as far as I'm concerned when you leave your damn blender on. But then he goes in the kitchen and uses a lighter for illumination when he is abducted and taken with his wife to the film set of his house. And this is where it even gets crazier, because his wife is suspended by some kind of strings and super glue, her fingers are super glued to the keys of a piano. She, by the way, is a pianist. And the abductor introduces himself.
I think they're piano wires.
Oh, are they piano wires?
Or some sort of wire.
Oh, that makes sense. He's like attached to the wall with some kind of rubber band, right?
Yeah, it's like a giant bungee.
Yeah, it's weird.
But really thick. Yeah, never really explained, but yeah.
No. But there's lots of shots where you like, the camera travels down this bungee. It really is a feast for the eyes. So the abductor introduces himself as an extra and immediately chops off one of the wife's fingers. And then they play this little game where the extra is really angry because he is poor and the director is rich. And he has thought that this extra, you know, has thought, well, you know, being rich, he's also got to be a bad guy too. But turns out the director is a really good, kind man. So he's angry that he's both rich and kind, where the extra is neither. So he, yeah.
I love the crazy guy logic.
Oh yeah, and so the deal is that he will let the director go if the director kills an 8-year-old girl who the extra brought along, kind of, he kidnapped her along the way. And if he doesn't kill this 8-year-old girl, that every 5 minutes, he's going to cut off another one of his wife's fingers. And after we get to the second cut, we discover that this extra is also a great dancer. There's a lot of comedy in this particular movie.
Yeah, he does a whole shtick where he changes into a bunch of costumes.
Yeah, it's fantastic. He seems to be a pretty accomplished extra. And he goes the extra mile. So the director decides to confess that he's not really a good guy. In fact, the director tells his actor friends not to work for a rival director because he can't stand his only real competition getting good actors for his films. So he makes up a story why you don't work with that other director. And the extra's like, oh, that is lame. You want to hear a real confession? I strangled my wife to death this morning, and I would have killed my son too, but that was too hard to do, as it turns out.
Yeah, and he described how his wife defecated herself while he was strangling with her, and her tongue like squeezed all the way out of her mouth and like flopped down on her throat. So he described it in great detail.
And then we get to finger number three, and that's when the director gives a confession about having a 3-year affair with the wardrobe girl. And this is where I thought the movie got a little weird. Because at this point...
this is where it got weird.
Well, because at this point, the director, as he confesses to this affair with the wardrobe girl, then tells his wife and the extra that unlike his wife, the wardrobe girl is smart and they have satisfying conversations. All his wife cares about is shopping and plastic surgery. She doesn't cook or clean, and her piano playing is shit. And the fingers aren't really going to any waste. So... the extra says, well, you know, she's been having an affair too. But, I'll tell you what, you make me laugh and I'll extend the time by 5 minutes each time. And the director is basically like, fuck you, you're a loser, cut off all her fingers, I don't care. And then as the clock goes off, the extra is going to go cut off the wife's finger, and the director's like, wait. And so he gives this closing statement. And then he drops trow and conjures up a fart.
Because farts are funny.
Yeah, well, the extra says that this is a cheap laugh. It's not even worthy of him. So the extra then takes the severed fingers and puts them over in a blender. Because, you know, he realizes that these fingers can be reattached through, you know, modern microsurgery. So here, I'm just going to put them in the blender.
And this is where the wife starts to lose her shit.
Yes, absolutely. So
she's been a real trooper up until this point.
It's true. Yeah, it's hard to falter, but yeah, she's going to lose her composure in a major way here in a second, because now the director is ready to kill the girl, but the extra ungags the wife, and she, in the most unsympathetic manner possible, screams, "Kill her! Kill her!" And then she gets one more finger.
Maybe even, what are you waiting for?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So then the director starts to strangle the girl, who is not, after all, a girl. It's the extra's son. But the son doesn't die. Instead, the extra slips on the wife's wedding ring on the floor and crashes into the wife, who apparently had the vampire fangs in her mouth, much like the actress in the movie in the first scene of this little short film? Or whether it was her real teeth?
Oh, I didn't catch that at all. I think she just went for it.
Oh, well, it's possible. But she went for it and bit him on the neck and killed him.
Yeah, it was such a weird combination of slapstick immediately followed by just this horrible gore.
Oh, yeah. And then... if that wasn't enough, then the kid looks at both the wife and the director and says, "You bastards, I'll take revenge." And then this part I don't understand, so you're going to have to explain it to me if you can. The director then...
No, I had questions for you.
Well, the director then goes and strangles the wife at the piano and talks to the wife as if she were the kid and turns and talks to the kid as if he is the wife. Like, I don't get that.
Yeah, so there were two competing theories that I couldn't decide on. One is that he's now had a psychotic break, sort of like Joker style. That's what the Joker tries to do to a lot of his victims, right? Is just... torture him to the point where they lose all touch with reality. Or he decides that he doesn't want this kid taking revenge, so he's going to act crazy and kill his wife to hopefully placate the kid. And then all's like even Steven at that point, right, kid?
I guess I don't know. I was like, ah, because well, again, I thought this was beautifully shot too. And the colors are rich and it was all very, it was all very stylish. It was like, wow.
And this story too also ends with a weird tongue thing.
Yeah. So I don't know, but not to be outdone, the last of the three movies is by a Japanese director named Takashi Miike. And he's known for something that, of course, I didn't write in my notes either. What are his big films?
Let's see.
Audition, right?
The Audition. Have you seen that one?
Yes, I have seen that one.
13 Assassins. That's a pretty good one.
I don't think I have seen that one.
That's really good. That one.
wait, hold on.
One always reminds me of.
Wait. Yeah? I think I did see 13 Assassins. That's the one that had a little bit more wire work than I was expecting, where they end up going into that little town. At the very end, there's a big showdown.
Oh, yeah. The last 40 minutes is a huge battle scene.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's 13 Assassins. Yeah. I've seen that. Yeah. I mean, really fantastic, but.
That movie always makes me think of having a newborn baby because it was in that weird time after you have a child where they're up at all weird hours, but they're not really aware enough that you have to watch kid-friendly TV. So I remember watching that movie in the middle of the night when I was up feeding my young newborn daughter, so trying to let my wife get some sleep.
I think I did the very same thing.
No, it's that kind of movie.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah,
your newborn daughter.
I figured if she can get a little language in her, right? I mean, you know, if mostly it's Asian screaming, but still.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, back to Box. This is a story about a softly spoken young woman who has a bizarre recurring dream about her being buried in a box in the snow, and she is searching for her long lost sister. And realizes that her dreams and reality may be connected. And this little short is all about symbolism. The girls in question are twins and they're circus acrobats contortionists.
And I find contortionists really creepy to begin with.
Oh, I agree.
Like, I do not enjoy watching circus acts with contortionists.
Yeah, I agree. Did I ever tell you... about the book Level 26.
Does not sound familiar.
It's actually three books. And, but the first one, it's really interesting. It's a novel, but periodically it tells you to go online and watch these little short films that are acting out other scenes in the novel.
And, oh, okay. I think I've heard of this.
Yeah, I think Michael Ironside's in the first one, but also there's a contortionist angle in the first one. And I think Justine Bateman is in the second one. But yeah, it's just...
Are there contortionists in the second one?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. The first one...
I might be in.
Yeah. The main bad guy is a contortionist. But then again, I think the first season of American Horror Story stars that same guy. The same contortionist guy who wears like the latex suits or whatever.
Never seen it.
Ah, yeah. Well, anyway, apparently doesn't get good until the Freak Show season, but I tried to watch it and my dog went so crazy over the creepy clown that I couldn't watch that show either. Even though I think it has Michael Chiklis in it.
Michael Chiklis is in it?
Pretty sure. Yeah.
That poor bastard.
Yeah, he's done worse. Yeah, so back to Box. It's all symbolism. And we've got this contortion. Wait,
was that on purpose? That was brilliant.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was on purpose.
I love that so much. That might be the favorite moment of any podcast we've ever done.
I thought it was a joke for one at least, so yeah. Yeah, so it's all symbolism. The girls are twins, or not twins maybe, but are they twins? Maybe they're twins. I don't know.
They're twins.
Okay. And is the circus master presumably also their father?
I think so. If he's not their biological father, he is certainly their father in everything else. I mean, he takes care of them. He's the only authority figure in their life.
And they're probably what, like 8 or 9 years old?
Sounds right. Yeah. I'm bad at guessing kids' ages.
Yeah, me too. They're small anyway, because they're contortionist kids. So there's lots of really, again, it's nice and slow, the pace of boxes.
And there's a giant misdirect in the very beginning when the woman meets with either like her editor or her publisher or something. And on the way out, he sees like this kind of ghostly girl down the hall. And it makes it seem like it's like a grudge type ghost. So you think it might be like a ghost revenge type story, like something horrible happened to the sister and now the ghost is going to come back and you know, exact some horrible revenge.
Exactly. Because of course she has this recurring dream about her sister being buried in the snow in a box. So,
right. And as the dream gets revealed more and more, you find out that she may be culpable in something horrible that happened to her sister.
Oh yeah. And I mean, again, I think the pace is perfect, but it's a slower pace. There's not tons of action necessarily in this part. And our narrator is Kyoko and her sister is Shoko. And one of the tricks they do is they do these contortion-y flips and bends and then put themselves into a box. Each has their own box. But after a performance, the circus master gives Shoko a gift, like a necklace. And so Kyoko, our narrator, is jealous. And not only does she get the gift, but she also is like sleeping with the circus master too. So there's a strong implication.
Shoko gets the necklace and then the circus master actually like says to Kyoto, maybe you'll get one when you do better.
Yeah.
when they've seemingly done the exact same thing. So he's totally screwing with her head.
Yes. Plus, there's implication there's been some molestation going on because he is all, like, cuddled up with Shoko, his favorite, and Kyoko is jealous. So, there ends up being, they are practicing, Shoko is in the box, and Kyoko decides to put the lock on the box so that Shoko can't get out. Presumably, just for a couple minutes to scare her.
Well, she wanted to be her for a night so she could experience the affections of the circus master.
Yes. Okay. Unfortunately, there is a fire caused by Kyoko knocking over a lantern, I believe, in the circus tent.
Yeah, because the circus master walks in on this and there's a bit of a struggle.
And yeah, so the tent is set on fire and Shoko is killed.
Burned to death inside the box.
It's because of his sister. So then 15 years later, the master comes back and again, this is all kind of in a dream kind of thing. The master comes back and tells Kyoko that there was always a similar necklace. So it was all this tragedy over jealousy that could have completely been avoided. So already you're living like the horror of this little girl who killed her sister all for naught. And so it's all sad. But then what's the twist?
You're getting to the very final twist?
The very final twist. Yeah, if there's more twists, let me know. Because I'm right to the very end.
Well, there's the plot where adult Kyoto goes and revisits the spot where she goes and visits it. So it's hard to describe because there are layers to the story. So there's author Kyoto, right? Who's having this dream about her and her sister as contortionists. And she, the one having the dream, goes to visit this area where presumably this horrible act occurred. And then she is then buried by the circus master, right? As an adult?
Yes.
And that's sort of the end of the dream, as he captures her and wraps her up and buries her as punishment.
I mean, all that could be some sort of crazy Asian fairy tale folklore kind of thing. Until it turns out...
Yeah, so it seems like that could be the trick, you know? It's not this ghost revenge type Asian horror movie. It's like this kind of myth fulfillment horror movie. But you're right. No, it's not that either.
Oh, no. It turns out these are all dreams. And both girls are still alive. And closer than ever, because they are conjoined twins. They are Siamese, if you please.
Yeah, that's the final money shot. Yeah, so bizarre.
Yeah, bizarre and like dark. Because, I mean, I can completely imagine if you were a conjoined twin having the fantasy of killing your twin. And then feeling guilty about the fantasy for killing your twin.
Right, so you have a dream about killing your sister that's buried inside another dream where you're feeling guilt about killing your sister.
Yeah. Yeah, a dream in which you also die, presumably.
Right.
Yeah, so, yeah, layers and
also
layers.
Your sister is still like a 9-year-old girl.
Yeah. Yeah, so... weird. All of these movies were weird. Increasingly so.
Yeah, that last movie, The Box, it was so beautifully done because there's so many... Once you get to the end and you can sort of unpack everything that happened and you realize it's a movie about dreams, and then you start to realize that from the very beginning it felt like a dream. Just all the layers. Just the experience of watching it felt like you were waking up from a dream, because you're trying to put together all the disjointed timelines and trying to figure out what actually happened when, and none of it really makes sense, but you can kind of follow a narrative thread. And I loved it. I mean, I didn't understand it, but I loved it.
Oh yeah, no, it was it doesn't have any gore. It's got the horror of a child being killed in a fire, and I guess the horror of the molestation, and the tension of jealousy and that kind of thing. But unlike the other...
And the horror of being buried alive.
Well, there's that too. But it doesn't have any of the gore that both the first two movies have.
And no tongue thing at the end, so my theory is shot to hell.
Well, but also no little comic relief, no winks. Like, the first two movies have little winks, especially the second one. The second one was all winks. It could have been a movie of just winks.
Yeah.
Because where Chan-wook Park was pretty much, I think, telling us a story to demonstrate how clever he was, and Fruit Chan was telling you a story that was as gruesome as you could possibly get, but still be a complete story that holds your interest. The Box is just a well-told story.
Yeah, and you mentioned that some versions of this movie have the stories in a different order. And I can totally see how if it went Dumplings, The Box, followed by Cut, you know, because The Box is so weird in like a very directory kind of way. I can see how Cut would seem in that order. It would seem not like a self-satire, but maybe just maybe a comment on movies like The Box, where he's saying, look at this asshole director.
Well, you know, that I hadn't thought about that. That's actually pretty clever. Yeah, so three extremes. I think it's a wonderful way to start Halloween season.
Yeah, happy Halloween to our three listeners. I really hope you're joking about mom not listening to the podcast anymore.
Because that cuts our listenership in half.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, she picks and chooses. You know, she's behind, so, you know, at this point you pick and choose. So we'll see. Although we're still gaining countries. We gained Turkey and Puerto Rico.
Nice.
I don't know why they consider, I don't want to consider Puerto Rico a separate country, but we'll take it. We still need two states though, Delaware and West Virginia.
I thought Jason was taking care of Delaware.
He's trying.
Or is it West Virginia?
He's trying to still take care of Antarctica as well. But let me tell you, hats off to both Germany and especially to the United Kingdom, because definitely from the Horror Etc. people, this interesting thing happening at the Horror Etc. podcast, they did like 300 and something episodes. And then because of the Horror Etc. podcast and because of just work things unrelated and life events, they ended up like having the show on hiatus since basically February. They just put out one episode, but it had been dark until then. Although they had a pretty robust forum that turned into a fairly robust Facebook page, you know? And
yeah,
there were so many people pining about, like, when are we going to get another episode, that one of the hosts, Anthony, said basically, hey, you know, we'll get to it when we get to it. We appreciate that you guys are fans, but A, we've given you 370-something free episodes, and B, if you guys hit me up on Twitter anymore, it's screwing up my Twitter feed, so, you know, don't do that. Be cool. And then also, people have been like, well, you know, we're all horror fans, and a lot of us have podcasts on our own, so we all have opinions and skills, so we can just do our own podcast. So they develop another page called the United Nations of Horror, which has a really good logo, by the way. That we'll see what comes. Yeah, we'll see what comes of that. I'm looking forward to it because it's interesting, because a lot of the people that have done little guest spots, not all of whom have ended up in the schlock corner, you know, are folks I've heard before. And there are also lots of people with really vast stores of information and various levels of involvement in actual filmmaking who are members of the Facebook page that, you know, like pretty much every single day you'll have somebody who says, hey, I just got these movies in the mail. You know, do you guys remember these? Or, hey, you probably haven't seen this movie because it's a little hard to get, but it's really worth your while. That's kind of like how I got turned on to the movie Phase 4 by Saul Bass, which is about ants. And, It's crazy good, but crazy. Anyway, but even more recently than all that, because right now the United Nations Horror is kind of coming together, and I thought about contributing something, but A, I don't know if I have A, time, or B, level of expertise that they need as far as, you know, knowledge. But also, it's all going to be done over Skype, and I'm not Skype proficient. So I'd be happy to email them in something, but I don't think I'm going to be having like Skype conversations about a certain topic, for instance. But anyway, the other thing
sounds fair.
Anthony from the podcast also had to come and lay the hammer down, because there like a couple times people have posted, you know, hey, you know, I'm just getting around to, you know, I've never seen any of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, and I wonder, you know, should I just start from the beginning and go, blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, some jackass or another will come on and say, you call yourself a true horror fan, but you've never seen this, you know, you're a punk, and you shouldn't even be in part of this group. And then other people immediately come and say, you know, hey, you need to be play nice, you're a jerk. And then somebody gets booted out of the group and people are all up in arms and and then people end up direct messaging Tony saying, hey, you need to come in here and settle these people down. And Tony just got married and was also like directing all of these fairly low budget movies, but still directing actual movies. He's like, hey, we'll just shut this whole thing down. Turns out we can be guests on other people's podcasts and still fulfill that need if you really want that. You know, if you're not going to play nice, we don't want to, we'll just take your ball away. So that falls into the category of people are just no damn good.
It's true.
Yeah. So I'm not sure what brought me to that except, I know why, because now,
I was really hoping I wasn't turning into a question.
Exactly. Yeah. No, but, before it was, you know, Canada and then Australia who are our biggest non United States listeners. But now, the UK, specifically, Scotland have, the UK is actually like our number one foreign country with growing membership. So bit by bit, I may get listeners, to the show one by one, but darn it, they're going to have something interesting to listen to.
Here's hoping.
Yeah. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.